the mysterious source of all things, said to be at the heart of all that is, and giving it life. It's a place from which all things are birthed, whether they are physical things or untangible things, emotions, thoughts, and but all manner of things are said to come forth from this mysterious source. Then they abide and they journey along for their time, however long or short that may be, and then return into dark enigma. Return to that source and repeat again and again. This happens. So it can be long, enduring arcs, like a lifetime each of us are experiencing in our own way. And it can be a very brief blip, like this word that just came out of my mouth and then returned and came into the next word. It's, you know, long arcs of time versus mere moments. All is that activity of the birthing, journeying for its time and returning. And during that time of journeying, it's not like we've left that source. It journeys along with us. And that's the thing that's kind of wonderful for me. It's not like this separate entity that exists out there that births things for us and then is disinterested and waits for it to return. The dark enigma is woven through us. It's within the journeying, within all that is. In the journeying, in the abiding, in the returning, it's still there. And with its Taoist roots, Taoist container within that, it has a lot to do with, it's a synonym really for the Tao itself, the way of things. And so this past week, I happened to have an article that danced its way along to me that spoke to this directly. So I plucked it out. It's from somebody who wrote this article for the Kyoto School of Philosophy. It just says, in China, ultimate reality was never seen as a static transcendental order for us to investigate. It was instead seen as a dynamic vortex called the Tao, at once an empty vessel compared to the womb of a mother, and a way or path taken to be a flow of energy giving forms to and animating the things we see. And I would add, it animates our seeing, and it animates us as we are seeing. And it is the seeing itself as well, woven deeply into this, the Tao, dark enigma. Not to really hear those. So in that movement, in that activity, in this way, in this flow, to me, that's where the dancing comes in. And that's kind of, I'm leaning towards that side tonight, the dancing of dancing with dark enigma, to explore further that activity, to illuminate it further and notice ways that I see it manifesting in particular forms, but also in itself, yeah. And I think one thing dark enigma seems to want, encourage, promote, hold, is this intimacy of connection with it. And that's why there's that birthing and returning and the journeying in between, throughout which dark enigma remains woven. It doesn't want us really to get too far along and away from it, which we tend to do with, you know, I can think of all the times, as I put it, I fall headlong into something and then go from there, and I can feel far away from source, even though I'm not, but I can feel that way. But dark enigma invites and encourages us, don't drift away too far. Surely come forth, engage, be active, do something, but don't wander too far and keep returning. Be nourished by that returning and then come forth again. So with that in mind, a chapter from the Tao Te Ching rose to mind, and I'd like to share that. This is a chapter 9 in the David Hinton translation. Forcing it fuller and fuller can't compare to just enough. And honed sharper and sharper means it won't keep for long. Once it's full of jade and gold, your house will never be safe. Proud of wealth and renown, you bring on your own ruin. Just do what you do, and then leave. Such is the way of heaven. This way of heaven, interesting too, because in Taoist thinking, heaven isn't a static, fixed place. It's an activity. It's a dynamic. So heaven could be, you know, to put it simply, it's when all things are in accord with the way of things, meaning I'm in accord with myself and in harmony with myself as I engage with the world per its harmony and its accord. And we are in accord together, in harmony together. When there's all that mutual harmony happening, following the way, then boom, you have heaven, active, dynamic, being experienced, not arrived at, not left at any time, but flowing along. Yeah. Another translation of this is those last two lines are, do your work and then step back, the only path to serenity. So that encouragement, come forward, do what's needed, do what is called for the occasion, for the circumstances, and then step back. That's the return. Wait to be called forth again, then emerge. I broke it down to four simple steps. Maybe not so simple. Four simple words. The steps themselves, we'll have to discover how simple they are. But emerge, engage, release, return. And I'll add the fifth of repeat. And that's the activity of Dark Enigma, the way of the Tao. The Tao of the Tao. Emerge, engage, release, return. Yeah. So, a beneficial way to allow things to settle and look at this pattern, this dynamic, is meditation. The meditation of our way. So having emerged and engage here for a bit, I'm going to release and return to silence where we began. And we all will. We'll sit here for a bit. I'll bring some words in, but invite you to return from wherever you are now. Release whatever you've been carrying and engaging in throughout the day or longer. Maybe just for the past hour, and we'll settle in, sit together. And then after period of sitting, I'll have some more words and exploration of the dance and the dancing and the dancers of Dark Enigma. So,
Breathing in, feeling the fullness of breath within your body, then releasing as you exhale. Body settling into itself. Release fully with that exhale and return to the fullness of you and your being, deeply here and now. Out of the silence of your sitting and your breathing, thoughts arise, and feelings, sensations, emotions. They drift along, sometimes like clouds, sometimes like beasts. But as you watch them without engaging, letting them be released, they return, and you return. Stillness and silence woven throughout it all. dark enigma, mysterious source of all things, earth and water, wind and flame, and all that comes forth from and is made of those base elements of existence. Mysterious source of awakening in its ancient forms, its present forms, and the forms to come. Mysterious source of compassion, wisdom, action, dedication. Life flowing beneath, between, and through it all, as it all. Source, mysterious, flowing along with it. With you, here, now, just as you are.
welcome back as you return, perhaps. Or you merge. Maybe you're emerging from something. Just going to flow into the talk from here, so if you need to get up and stretch or move about or anything, please do so, and then return. So, working from this primal and primordial movement and activity of Dark Enigma, the arising and falling, the emerging, abiding, and returning, my hand does this. I notice arising and falling, abiding and returning, and it's like conducting music, but it's also, it's like, oh, it's a dance. And that's what lit up for me. I think last week when I was commenting on what Megan had brought in, there was my hand doing this, and I thought, oh, there's this dancing we're speaking of. And so that's where I danced along. I followed that rhythm, followed that way of what was illuminating for me. And so considering, again, this primordial movement and its connection with the Tao, one of the first things that came to mind as far as a dance, so to speak, is the Taoist concept and idea, encouragement for Wu Wei, often translated as non-action, but misunderstood if you just take it at face value, because it doesn't mean no action. It means no extra action and no lacking action, acting in a way that's completely sufficient and appropriate to the occasion. So you're not wasting any energy at all, might be a way to say that, yeah? So Wu Wei, acting in such a way that, like I said earlier, is connected to Dark Enigma, connected to the source. As it emerges, when it's out there doing its thing, whatever the activity is, and when it returns. So efficient and sufficient through and through, nothing extra, nothing lacking. There's more to it than that when you go deeper into the characters themselves, the words themselves. So you have Wu Wei. The character Wei means activity or action. And Wu means non or not. But it's also the same Wu for emptiness that we use. Nothingness, not being, you know, that not. And as we often say in our tradition, vastness. So you could also use that instead of non-action. You could say emptiness action or vastness activity. And that's what's being spoken of with Wu Wei. Act as the vastness, or be a vessel for the vastness in your activity. Partner with it. Allow it a place to come into being. Be its hands and eyes and its feet in your doing. And then return to it. Be replenished. Repeat. And then things get even more interesting when we go deeper into the word, which I'm going to do visually now. I'm drawing from, some of you may have attended a retreat by Joan Sutherland some years ago called Koan Ancestors, where she went through a variety of Chinese terms, working with the characters and going back to the origin of the characters themselves. And this was one of them that came up. I'm also working from David Hinton. Primarily the source I'm looking at is Hunger Mountain that he wrote in, but he writes about this in other places as well. But I'm just going to bring up the character Wu here and talk about it a bit and its origins. So this may look familiar. The koan, does a dog have Buddha nature or not? And the answer being no, this is the character, Wu, which means no, not. Yeah, it actually means not, but often translated as no. And so it's also saying, does a dog have Buddha nature or not? Emptiness might be another response. Vastness, yeah. But when you look at the origin of this word, beyond our English words, when you go into where this character, not the word, but this character itself and the words that came from it, you go back about 3,000 years to the oracle bone inscriptions that went through several iterations and evolutions before arriving at the modern characters we have these days. But when you go back that far, just a moment. You get just a moment. I can't get to my clicker. Just thanks for your patience here. You get this. Is that coming up? Okay, great. So, David Hinton says in the opening chapter, speaking about this character, for as far back as the eye can see, the pregnant emptiness at the heart of things has been a woman dancing, her swirling movements enhanced by foxtails streaming out from her hands. And that's the character you see here. A woman shaman, as I was told, a woman shaman dancing while holding foxtails, swirling, and her movements creating the dance. And that's at that time, 3,000 years ago, that's the word that meant not, that meant emptiness or vastness, or that's the character that meant it. That's how they expressed it. And so it's not, you know, we often talk about emptiness isn't void at all. And you can see in this how very not void it is. When you think of this woman dancing, interestingly, this exact same character means dance. So, right here at the beginning of this words coming into being, you have vastness, emptiness, not, and dance all contained as one. So, to return to how this character evolved over time to our modern form, we have this. And you can kind of see on the top of the lines and things on the top are the body, the woman's body transformed into that. And those four dots beneath are flames. So the foxtails over time turn to fire. And there's a different character for fire that got transposed to be those four dots burning at the bottom. So when you break it down, even looking at the modern character, you have a body of sorts illuminated and fueled by flames beneath, keeping it going, keeping it running along. So that's the not. Non-being is another translation of that character. In the emptiness form, it's the non-being in the sense of, again, not a vacuum, but vast, undifferentiated potential waiting to come forth with this energy, the energy of this woman dancing with the foxtail swirling, or the energy of flames heating and encouraging whatever's about to come forth. And then just to add on to this, we have this character at the bottom, which is the modern character for dance. So you can see the lines, the above lines for emptiness or not, non-being, are the same in both characters. And in dance, the foxtails just eventually transformed into legs and feet, so to speak. But there's still that source material, that source character still present in both of these. So in a way, you can see how that dancing has been going on for a very long time in the vastness, in the emptiness of things, in the, again, the vast undifferentiated potential of being. And that's that place of that pregnant emptiness, as David Hinton put it, or dark enigma waiting to birth something. So the dancing is happening there even before the birthing has happened. And then the birthing of it happens, the coming forth, the emerging happens, and that's a dance. And the returning is a dance. A dance through and through with many different steps and rhythms, but there, thoroughly, again, primordially, from the very beginning and throughout all this time. So having connected with that primal and primordial dancer, maybe the original dancer, I might say, an original in the sense of at the origins of things back 3,000 years ago, even before, but also original as in at the origin point, meaning right here. The original dancer, that thing, that activity, that energy that is at the origin of each moment, dancing, when everything is originating. Yeah. But from that origination, that originating point, come forth particular ways of dancing, particular dancers, ways of being. And so there's a few I want to speak about that I've come to know and get acquainted with over the years of my journeying through this practice, that when I spent a little more time with them this past week, realized how much connection they have to this dark enigma and the activity of it, as we've been speaking of it. So the first one I want to bring in is connected to the invocation that we use often. During the meditation, I kind of did a very brief sampling of the invocation that I begin with: dark, mysterious, source of all things, earth, water, wind, and flame, ancient and present Buddha, as we go on from there. Because of having a connection with Taoism for a long time, I started using that dark, mysterious as my first thing to invoke. But before then, and in the sutra book, you may have come across Black Tara. It's in our meal service too. We've gone to a retreat. When we're getting ready to serve things, we begin with a chant, Black Tara, mother of all things. And then we go on from there. And so I want to talk about Black Tara as one of the primordial dancers here. In this group of dark mothers, as they're known, great dark mothers. So the description of Black Tara, one description is, by the power of her regal frowning, and that's because all of these dancers I'm about to speak of are in Tibetan Buddhism known as the wrathful emanations. So fierce protectors, strong energy, fierce energy, yeah. So that's why there's this regal frowning that she does, Black Tara. So by the power of her regal frowning, the resounding vibration of Hung and the glare from her radiant Vajra light, which is like a fire shower, she shatters the hearts and heads of all malignant spirits and makes them faint into a state of Dharmata, which is emptiness or the true nature of reality. So she has something in common with Kali in the Hindu tradition, kind of a destroyer. But you see, it's a very compassionate destruction that she's doing. You know, these malignant spirits, she's dancing to shake them loose so that they can fall back into the true nature of reality, fall back into emptiness so they can return to source, return to dark enigma, yeah? They talk about, you know, she stamps the earth and smacks the mountains with her hands, does those kind of things. Reminds me of like a Hakka dance, that kind of fierce, strong activity, strong energy. And so, you know, within me, within, you know, the way I see this dance happening is when I get stuck in some kind of unhelpful thinking or unhelpful habit, when I become a malignant spirit, yeah, stuck in my ways of being, maybe drifted further away from that connection with dark enigma, got entangled in things. Well, there's Black Tara there at that origin place dancing to help break apart those obstructions and constrictions that I've created so that I can return again to Source, to Dark Enigma, be refreshed and dance in a different way, not such a tangled way. Yeah. So I see her dance in that particular way is in service of that primordial movement of emerging, abiding, returning again and again. Yes. So I'll bring in another dancer, another great black mother. This one is Ekajati. She's known as the mother of the mothers of all the Buddhas. So she's a source mother for all the mothers, again, and all the Buddhas that these mothers give birth to there at the beginning. Her name, Ekajati, means one braid of hair. And so she has, in her depictions, she's drawn with one braid of hair. She also has only one eye. It's the third eye. She has that. The other two are present but sunken in. So it's just her third eye. That's her one eye that she uses. She has one fang. That's the only tooth she has. And one breast. And hearing all these ones where we think there should be two or more, in the case of hair perhaps, well, not me, but some of us, it can feel like a depletion in a way, but it's the actual, I'd say actually it's the opposite of that, because she represents absolute ultimate unity, ultimate sufficiency. She needs only one eye, and it sees all. It takes in all, views all, yeah? She needs only one fang, apparently, and through that, she can eat and devour what she must and be nourished. She doesn't need all the extra. It's that ultimate, again, efficiency and sufficiency. And that one breast, which is plenty to nourish all things. For she is, again, the mother of all the Buddhas. So she represents that primordial state of completely sufficient being in and of itself, yeah? And I think of her as, well, the koan that came to mind when I was thinking of her was, we have this koan, the sword that cuts into one. I was thinking of Ekajati as the dancer that dances all things into one. So in my life, when I'm split and fractured and can't seem to get things pulled together, can't seem to feel on track, feel centered, well, Ekajati is there at the origin source, dancing, to help dance all these things into one. Not necessarily by combining them, but maybe releasing them from this idea of separation. I don't know what happens. I just know, I appreciate that there's something in me, something in the world, dancing this dance of oneness, calling me back to it, to release the separation, to heal the fragments, to join together what has been parted, yeah. Which, again, feels like that returning, coming back together, returning to source, into that absolute oneness, the vast emptiness, the undifferentiated way of being, not separate, not scattered at all, yeah. And then the third and last dancer, with her particular dance that I want to bring in, is Troma Nagmo. She's known as the Great Black Mother of Compassion, and she's the wrathful form of the goddess Prajnaparamita. So she is the fierce wisdom, fierce Prajnaparamita. And it's said that through the practices associated with Troma Nagmo, we find a remedy for our afflictive emotions, and which helps to cut attachment to ego and attachment to things. Yeah. And it says, we awake from ignorance to recognize our own true nature, the Dharmakaya, the vastness body, the primordial body of the vastness itself. So Troma Nakmo is her dance is one of like Manjushri's sword, kind of slicing things, cutting things, releasing in that way, severing that which we may have gotten attached to that's become toxic, something like that. Yeah, in my life, that's what I feel is like, oh, this is that dance that can help me realize what I'm tangled up in and attached to and bound by and help to cut it and release it. So a little bit more fierce maybe in her way than the others with that cutting and slicing. If you've ever heard of the Chud practices, Troma Nakmo is based with that, the feeding your demons to release them, to offer them what they need, but then separate the attachments, let things go and drift along their way. So I want to, you know, those are the three of them I wanted to speak of, and I have images of all three of them to bring forward, and I will do that here. So you can get a glimpse of some of their manifestation as imagined by a few people. So you have them from left to right. We have Black Tara, Ekajati, and Troma Nakmo. And you notice, even though they're great dark mothers and great black mothers, as they're called, Black Tara isn't completely black. It's more of a midnight blue. And all of them have more of a blue than a pure black. And it was funny because years I was trying to figure out, having connected with Black Tara in our sutra service and in the invocation, or in our meal service in the invocation, I was looking for images of her. And every time I came up, I kept seeing blue ones. And I was like, that's not her. And it turns out, oh, yes, it is. So whenever you see a blue wrathful being, or even a benevolent being in Tibetan Buddhism, that's another way of representing black. Deep blue, deep midnight blue. So yeah, it was great to, you know, revisit with these dancers and their particular dances, as well as reconnect with that shaman woman dancing with her foxtails swirling. You know, reconnect in a way through these images and the characters and their origins, but also to reconnect with the energy of it, which feels like what's happening here throughout this series with the dark enigma and the dancing along with it that we're doing. And so to bring things to to close up here, something else occurred to me, or connected to this for me, you know, with all these descriptions and different dancers and different ways of dancing that I've spoken of, but that we know in our lives that I haven't even touched on, right? All these ways of being and doing and the ways that we manifest in the world. You know, there's a lot of options, wide variety to choose from. And there can be this desire to figure out, well, which is the right one? Which is the best one? Which is the one that's going to be most beneficial for me and most helpful for me to connect with and study and practice more deeply with? Which connects with the koan that we've been working with this week in the Zoom Zendo that I lead. In this koan, the person's talking about a different description and category of things, but it's essentially the same question of, you know, out of all these possibilities and all these descriptions, and in this case, out of all these dancers and dances, which is the best combination, or which is the right one? Which is the one that is the ultimate? And Dungshan's reply to a question of that sort is, I'm always intimate with it. I'm always intimate with it. Not naming a single one, but not excluding a single one. Acknowledging that the dance you're dancing right here and now, the dancer that you are, the partner that is partnering with you in this dance, whether it's Black Tara, Ekajati, Troma Nakmo, or anything else. Your own thoughts, feelings, passions, whatever you're most intimate with right here and now, and always are most intimate with. That's the one. So the encouragement here isn't so much which dancer to be and which dance to dance, but it's keep dancing. Continue to dance. Be in touch intimately with the source, the rhythm that's flowing along. Follow it, dance along with it. Know that sometimes you must take the lead and sometimes you must follow. Sometimes you have to partner equally. Can't tell who's leading or following, but you're still journeying along, yeah? So whether it's the dances of the Dark Enigma or the Dark Enigma itself, always intimate with it. Each and every one of us. Impossible to be otherwise, really. So, thank you. I'll wrap it up there, and we have time, you know, for you to bring forth anything that's coming forth for you as we continue dancing along. I thought I'd start just to check in with Megan and Sarah in case there's anything you have arising that you'd care to bring forward. And if not now, in a bit, if that's the case, yeah, please do so. And then we'll go from there. But yeah, Megan or Sarah, anything that you would care to bring in?
Well, thank you, Andrew. That was really just lovely and helpful. And I'm really grateful for you bringing in the dancing and the dark feminine. And you know, I guess the word that I kept thinking of is that it's healing. It's that action of breaking up that which has become sort of stale or stuck or tangled, and, you know, breaking it up and releasing it. And, you know, I think so much for me has been feeling stuck and tangled this week, that it's a really good reminder of the movement. And I really love the, you know, the image of the dancer and the how much it flows and moves. And then I was thinking of the word intimate and the koan that you brought in, and realizing that somehow I can hold that as a static thing. And it reminds me that I wish there was a word like intimate-ing to make it like a gerund, a moving, living thing. Because it's so easy to get encrusted and to stop flowing. And so I really love the way that you're warming it up and enlivening it with this truth of movement and flow and energy. It's really lovely. Thank you.
Well, yeah, certainly. Thank you. That's great.
Yeah, I found myself, especially having that image of the dancer with fox tails and the way that I've been thinking a lot about how practice helps right now in a time like this, in a time of difficulty and confusion and losses, and at the same time, so many small beauties and the power of the kinds of awakening that are going on in our lives, individually and collectively. And so that the vastness dances, and the the vastness being dancey, feels to me, I have a sort of visceral feel of the way that I can take refuge there. The way that in my meditation, I can release my energy into that energy of dance that is already apparent moment by moment by moment. The thoughts dance, the emotions dance, the floor dances. You know, the cup at my feet is a dance. And so when I can take a little bit of time to get still enough to feel the danciness of everything that arises in the stillness, it feels, then I feel that kind of shaking loose that you were talking about with Black Tara, and not as something I have to do, but as a description of what it's like when I feel the dance of the water in the radiator next to me, the dance of my sorrow when somebody's I love is suffering, the dance of my horror at actions that are repugnant, the dance of my joy when I witness people's courage and kindness. So a kind of companioning. We don't often, I think, so somehow that dance is inseparable from its own source, that it's not that the source gives rise to that and it goes someplace, but that that there isn't anything I can do that would separate me from it. I find that really helpful at this time.
Yeah, thank you. Hearing you say all that, I'm grateful because it reminds me I am also finding it helpful at this time, and to have you bring it forth more deeply in the way you just did, it's like, oh yeah, yeah. So thank you. I really like that you said it's not something we have to do. Not another thing we have to do. It's like the dance is dancing. Join in, yeah. Thanks, Sarah. So we're, I think, you know, there's two screens of us, but a small enough group, I think it'll be all right. If you want to speak, go ahead and unmute yourself. And if you're trying and having difficulty, flap your arms around. I'll be scanning around. Others may as well. But if you'd like to speak again, just unmute yourself and come on forward. And I'll just say, hey, Tinny, I saw that you're here now. I looked at the other screen. Here you are. So welcome. Glad you could make it.
Yeah, it's great to be here. I'm sorry I couldn't get here earlier, but here I am. So, and you recorded your talk, so I get to enjoy it later.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks, Andrew.
You'll hear yourself saying that. Thanks everyone for being here, and singing and dancing are the voice of the way. So I'm gonna grab this bell from over here and sing the four boundless vows. You can join in from where you're at. will remain, except for me, remain muted, and then join in, please. And a few announcements when we close, or before we close.
The four boundless vows. I vow to wake the beings of the world. I vow to set endless heartache to rest. I vow to walk through every wisdom gate. I vow to live the great Buddha way. I vow to wake the beings of the world. I vow to set endless heartache to rest. I vow to walk through every wisdom gate. I vow to live the great Buddha way. I vow to wake the beings of the world. I vow to set endless heartache to rest. I vow to walk through every wisdom gate. I vow to live the great Buddha way.
So, yeah, wonderful. Thank you all again, once more. Great to be here joining together, and we'll be here again next week. Tinny will be hosting, and in a moment I'll see if you have anything you'd like to bring in, Tinny. But before that, just want to mention, supporting this series and other series like this to come. Any donations, any dana that you are able to offer, $10, $20, $5, whatever it may be, it's much appreciated and helps support what's happening and make possible for more like this to keep happening. So donation site, on the donation tab on the Springs Mountain Sangha website, you can use that and just put a note for Dancing with Dark Enigma, make a note of what it's for, and it'll make sure to get routed along to the correct place, as I understand it. So please, yes, thank you. It's good. Good to feel nourished in that way as well. Yeah. So, let's see if Tenny, again, if you have anything in particular to bring in for next week. And then also Megan and Sarah, anything that you would care to bring in before we close?
Yeah, thanks, Andrew. I'll just say something brief. Can you hear me okay? Is that?
Yeah.
Okay. So I've been, reading the Hinton off and on, and occasionally waking up in the middle or sometime in the night with some, an idea, maybe I could talk about this or maybe I could talk about that. And so I'll grab my voice recorder and try to record what the idea is before going back to sleep. And the main thing that's been happening is I keep thinking about poems that seem pertinent. So probably no surprise to anybody, but I'm pretty sure that I'll bring in at least a few poems as a kind of core part of the evening next time. That's about it, I guess. Thanks.
All right. Thanks, Tinny. Okay. I think that's it. Thanks, everyone, again. Have a wonderful evening. Keep on dancing. Dance into the evening. Dance into your dreams. Dance as your dreams. And see you next Wednesday. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Andrew.
Thank you.